Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
We're rolling Wednesday, November 19, 2025 is the date. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I'm your host, Gabe Kuhn, on @Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the show. That would be Connor Dunning on @CDunning929. Connor, how's it going, brother?
What's up, man?
Nothing much. I got made fun of incessantly by my buddies. I was supposed to game with them last night, but I got a call, and my wife hosts a Dancing with the Stars, watch party
right
at my house. And
heard there was a big elimination last night.
Yeah, one of the Secret Lives of Mormon wives.
Was it Whitney?
Yeah, Whitney. She got eliminated. Although she is the best. She's like a professionally trained dancer. So that shows you what you need to know about that show. But I got a call from my buddy, and he's like, hey, we're on. Where are you at? And I'm like, I got to finish Dancing with the Stars. And I got made fun of incessantly. Is that fair? I don't know. I don't know if I should be.
This is 30.
I shouldn't be getting that type of flack. We got children at the house,
man.
We're having a family. We're
spend time with your family and wife? You terrible person.
We're having a family Dancing with the Stars watch night, and I have to be present until my friends leave the house.
Yeah, that's the deal.
Okay, so you're not on board.
I think that spending quality time with your child and your wife and your friends watching Dancing with the Stars is a perfectly reasonable reason to miss playing Fortnite.
This is why we jive so well together, bro.
Yeah.
This is why we get along.
Gaming happens in the dead of night when everything and all responsibility has rested.
Yes. 100%.
Yeah.
And I thought he would have understood it. My buddy, who was just like, he has three kids at the house. I figured he would have understood a little bit, but I guess not. But we have 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We'll open on overreaction, not an overreaction like we normally do on a Wednesday. As far as guests are concerned, Braden Fehoko. How about it? 2019 LSU national champion with that Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson team, and the Braden Fehoko team. We need to mention that. He will join at 4:30, talk some NFL, and also, talk about the LSU opening and Lane and sort of where his mind is at right now on what Lane's decision is going to be and what LSU is ultimately going to have to do. 5 o'clock, David Cobb will join. We'll talk some college football. CFP rankings are out. And Connor, I think my prediction came true about the CFP rankings. We were going to have more people up in arms than we've had the first 2 weeks, and I think that came true. And one thing I will say before we get into the whole diatribe and overreaction, not an overreaction about the CFP rankings, the one complaint that I will not hear is that the CFP committee was inconsistent with their reasoning last night. They were very consistent. They just held up a ridiculous metric, in my opinion. And it was like a point of emphasis. The points of emphasis in the NFL before the season where the refs are going to call, illegal man downfield or illegal formation if the tackle's lined up in the backfield. And then the first game, you see them throw every flag. It felt like the committee met about this particular metric that they were going to use, and they just applied it to everything on the board. So the one thing I don't want to hear from people today about the CFP rankings is that they were inconsistent. They were very consistent, but I do think they were consistently bad. 6 o'clock, more CFP talk, more college football talk with Colton Denning. We'll have the Blitz at 6:30, and we'll have a trip around the NFL at 5:30. And Shedeur Sanders gave a quote today. How long until – you think it'll be tomorrow morning, Rex Ryan? Do you think he's writing up his rant already?
Yeah. Probably so.
Okay. So we'll talk about that and trip around the NFL. But let's go ahead and get it rolling. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
All right, Gabe, the college football playoff rankings release was last night. The Miami-Notre Dame issue no longer seems to be the most pressing issue to the country. Instead, the committee dropped Bama 6 spots to number 10 after losing to Oklahoma. Notre Dame stood pat at number 9, meaning Notre Dame is now ranked ahead of Alabama. Notre Dame belongs ahead of Bama after the Tides lost to Oklahoma. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
Just a ridiculous overreaction. Hell no. No chance. They lost to the college football playoff ranked Oklahoma at 8. You're telling me that loss dropped Alabama 6 spots after a 8-game win streak and a 5 or 6-game win streak within the SEC? That seems a little drastic, but Alabama being ranked below Notre Dame, let's sort of hop into it. Their logic is basically, and I say basically because it's not exactly the same, but it's basically the same that they use for Notre Dame and Miami and how they rank them. Miami is below Notre Dame, even though Notre Dame won the head-to-head, because the idea here is we think your losses are worse. Except in this case, it seems to be strictly centered on Alabama's week one loss to Florida State. I get it aged badly. I get they got beat by 2 scores. But come on, please. Spare me. They rattled off 8 straight wins, then lost to the committee's current number 8 team in Oklahoma. And it's like the Florida State loss didn't matter until they lost to Oklahoma, but when you compound it with the number 8 team losing to that team with the Florida State, it makes you drop from grace that much. Like, I just don't understand that part of it. Because they had them ranked at number 4 in the first 2 weeks, even though they knew that that Florida State loss was on the resume. The committee picked a point of emphasis, like I mentioned already, in this case, weighing losses. Not wins, mind you, weighing losses, and they rode it until the wheels fell off. But with this particular set of circumstances here, with Alabama being ranked below Notre Dame by a spot, Notre Dame number 9, Alabama number 10, you got to get real at some point. You just do. You know damn well if you're the committee, that's wrong. That's wrong. I think we're well beyond the point of forgiving Alabama for losing to Florida State. It could matter a little bit. It can mean something. But it's not that drastic of a loss to drop them 6 spots and below a Notre Dame team who has the same record. Especially when you consider, again, Alabama rattled off 8 straight wins, 6 straight in SEC play. They have 4 ranked wins to Notre Dame's 1 over number 22, number 20, number 14, and of course number 4, Georgia. And basically the committee is telling Alabama those 3 extra ranked wins that you have don't matter more than the Florida State loss you sustained in week 1 on the road. I just find that pretty ridiculous in the grand scheme of things. Now, other people are still going to do the Miami thing. Miami beat them head-to-head. You know, they should be ranked ahead. I don't really share that sentiment, but with this particular 9-10 skew where Notre Dame's ahead of Alabama, I just think that is so dumb. I think it is insane to discount all 3 extra wins in the top 25 that Alabama has and hold the Florida State loss that they sustained week 1 and then rattled off 8 straight wins, holding that against them. Now that they've lost to the number 8 team in your rankings, you're going to hold the Florida State loss against them. But before, you didn't. Come on. That's where I do think they were consistent in weighing losses last night. That's the metric that they decided they wanted to hang their hat on. But I think this, the idea of the Florida State loss mattering now, is where they were inconsistent last night.
They are also consistent in they mostly get the rankings right, I think, by having the correct teams in. We can talk about the order of them, but very much like the discussion that
does matter because it could mean a home game in the first
it
round
does.
And all that.
It does. It will matter the final week for the most part. But it matters because it kind of signals which way they're going to go. But for the most part, when you look at the teams that are actually in the college football playoff, you look at it, you say, this makes sense. But then when you dive into the home games and why teams are placed where they are, you're just like, this makes no sense. And that's why they are consistent in they will get the teams correct, but they leave something in there to criticize every single week. Yeah, that is completely avoidable.
The only pushback I would really have on you saying, okay, they got the right teams in there for the most part, but I think this could figure itself out anyway. Utah, as high as they are, and right there on the outside looking in, I find a bit bizarre. They have played their two best teams they played this entire year, BYU and Texas Tech, who are also ranked there right next to them, and Tech, I think, is five. They got beat by both those teams. And then they whooped up on the rest of their competition. I heard Hunter Yurecek, who's, I guess, the interim committee chair, the AD over at Arkansas, we're all familiar with. He said that their average margin of victory matters. But if you're whooping up on bad teams, like, I don't know how much we should, you know, give you the benefit of the doubt when you do play good teams and you lose to them. So that's the one complaint I'd have.
Yeah, but they're not in the playoff.
But yeah, but they're right there.
Sure.
They're like one of the first two out.
Yeah, but they're still out. So like that's what I mean about like the 12 teams that they have in the actual playoff. I look at it and I say, that makes sense. Now, the order of them and certain teams having home games versus others not having home games, I don't think makes a ton of sense. Alabama dropping as much as they did, not sure that makes a ton of sense. But I do think that the teams in there at least make sense. But I mean, yeah, Utah's probably too high. But as long as they're not in the playoff, I'm fine with it. They don't belong in the playoff.
Now that we've ironed out that I think it's ridiculous, like patently ridiculous, that Notre Dame is ranked ahead of Alabama in this week's college football playoff ranking, can we get back to Miami and Notre Dame and how people are still complaining about it? People are writing think pieces about it. Why, you know, head to head, why do we even play the game if it's not going to matter? Well, again, like, let's go back to it. When you look at the rankings and how they stand right now, Notre Dame lost to number 3 and number 13 in the college football playoff rankings. Miami lost to two unranked teams in the college football playoff rankings. That's why head-to-head is not mattering as much. Because, you know, they don't have that many more top 25 wins. Notre Dame has rattled off a bunch of wins in a row. They haven't lost since week 2. I think that matters. I also think it does matter, like, the context of the win that Miami got over Notre Dame, right? You got it by 3 with a late field goal at home against a freshman starting his first game at quarterback. And that freshman, CJ Carr, has looked phenomenal as the season has gone along. So I think there's a lot of context and a lot of reasons to still have Notre Dame ahead of Miami. And then I want to ask this question, and I don't want to seem like petulant or like I'm trying to go after people who hold this. Well, I guess I am trying to go after people who hold this opinion that Miami should inevitably be ahead of Notre Dame because they have the head-to-head win. I went, and just for funsies, because I wanted to see if I'm lying to myself about how I feel about Notre Dame versus Miami. And I went through just about every metric, every ranking known to man in college football that we watch and we hold dear. And I came up with, you know, strength of record, SP plus, FPI, Massey, Sagarin, AP coaches, right? So I went through all of those. You know what all of those different rankings and metrics have in common? They all have Notre Dame over top of Miami. Like, why? What I would ask to the people that continue to bang the drum for Miami is, why does every metric, every ranking that you look at that takes into consideration college football, analytics, all of that, whether it's computer-based, even the old simulated BCS poll has Notre Dame over Miami. Why does every single ranking that you could possibly go look at to rank these teams have the same thing, and that's Notre Dame over Miami? If it's not supposed to be that way, why does every ranking have the same thing? That's the question I'd ask to those people at this point.
It feels like they were very reactive to the social media and noise about Miami and Notre Dame with this ranking. So I don't know if it's one of those deals where they're going to be different next week and they're doing it to calm the noise this week. I don't know. They are very inconsistent in being consistent with the actual rankings. And
you know what I'll never forgive these people for? These people that are beating the drum for Miami? They have me protecting Notre Dame. I'll never forgive them for having to protect Notre Dame. I'm not a Notre Dame fan. I've never upheld the sanctity of them being independent. I think it's ridiculous. I think it's annoying that they get all the schedule freedom and they don't play a tough schedule. Then they inevitably always get what they want in the college football playoff, always have a chance to play for a national title. I don't like that part of it. So to the people that are backing up Miami and making me uphold the name, the good name of Notre Dame, I'll never forgive you for this. I just won't. And I did come to this realization also, Connor. Another thing that we can't keep ignoring about this conversation and why people are so dug in on, Miami has the head-to-head, they should be ahead of Notre Dame. If we take it into consideration that people just hate Notre Dame, like, I think that's probably...
I think that makes a lot of sense, yeah.
I think that's probably, if you gave truth serum to people, the people that hold this opinion, I think that would probably be the main reason that they're so dug in on their side. They're so dug in for Miami. I think that there's just a natural, healthy hate around the country for Notre Dame and their hoity-toityness and their unwillingness to break their independence.
Correct. I think that's absolutely part of it.
That, to me...
Absolutely.
I don't even think it's just part of it. I think that's probably the largest part of it.
I don't necessarily disagree. I think the Miami fans are pissed off that, you know, we beat them, we should be ranked ahead of them, which I understand that. When you start ignoring your other losses, yes, and the other head-to-head matchups is where I lose you.
You
stay
lost
on
two
point.
Unranked games.
Right.
They lost to number 11 or number 13 and number 3. Like that, I think we should take into consideration wins, yes, but you can't lose to unranked opponents and expect to get everything that you want and more.
Right.
That's how I've been very consistent on this with Miami.
All right, moving on. The Grizzlies lost to the Spurs last night, 111-101. The Grizzlies' step back has been more drastic than expected. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
Oh, my gosh. Not at all an overreaction. We knew that there was going to be a step back in expectation and production, right? Like, Desmond Bane's gone. Team's not what it once was. You're trying to rebuild, bring in Cedric Coward. He's going to be a rookie, so how much can you expect from him? I'll get to him in a second.
Turns out a lot.
I'll get to him in a second, like I said. But, you know, I didn't expect it to be 4-11 at this point in the season. And last night, oh my gosh. Like, the frustration I had watching the end of that game, I can't explain it to you enough. You gave up an 11-0 run in the last 3:13 of that game. You didn't score at all. Tomas Isolo, at this point, when you count interim and the start of this season, do you know what his record is against teams above 500?
Isn't it like 1-19?
1-19.
Yeah.
They're going to play the Kings tomorrow. We'll see how it looks. It'll be right here on 92.9 FM ESPN, 6:30, 7 o'clock. We'll pass you off to Eric Hasseltine. But that's awful. And I hate how I feel right now. Because I'm meeting the start of this season and the rest of the season with a indifference. And I think this is a really, really bad time to have people indifferent about the Grizzlies organization, because a lot's on the line right now. You need a lease signed that has yet to be signed. It's been delayed. You have cheap tickets. You don't have fan engagement right now. And again, indifference is not good for that. But, like, I've been using my critical thinking cap lately. And when you look at all the factors here, Ja's out. We don't have a full-on understanding of when he's going to be back with the calf injury, and you got to be careful with that because of all the Achilles injuries that have perpetuated throughout the NBA the past couple of years. And even when he's been in, he's been relatively disengaged, not fully bought into what Tomas Isolo is selling. Jaren right now, he's looking overvalued after signing his max. Now, again, like, I don't think that's all his fault. I don't think he's being used correctly or utilized in the correct way every time out. So there's that. But right now, if you look at the production versus what he's being paid, you can't make bones about it. He's not living up to the contract that he signed this offseason. And then I think the biggest problem and the biggest thing leading me to indifference about this Grizzlies team in this particular season is I see a coach in Tomas Isolo who, in my opinion, like, maybe he could change, maybe he could, but if he continues what he's doing and he continues to be as dug into his system and his rotations as he is, he has no future in the NBA. He just doesn't. He could be a guy on the, an assistant, but as a head coach, he's going to have to adjust. But also with that, he's a guy that's not going to be fired by this organization anytime soon. He's the GM's handpicked guy that he brought over from Europe. He has the built-in excuse of injuries that we know doesn't tell the full story. But at the same time, that's an excuse that can be used by the GM who hired him and by him on the back end of this terrible start. But it allows him grace. Now, all that said, I think the one thing that's keeping me engaged with this team is that one guy, that young man, number 11 overall pick, Cedric Coward. He's awesome. And I have gotten to a point, and I know it's really early in the season, they've played 15 games, but he's already starting. He's putting up 14 points per game, doing a lot of good things. I see a world going into the future, because we're having our problems with Ja Morant right now. I see a world going into the future where Cedric Coward ends up being the new centerpiece for this Grizzlies organization. He guards 1 through 4. He has length. He has athleticism. He can shoot. He's a plus rebounder. 40% from 3 on 5 attempts per game. He's got the highest net rating of on the Grizzlies among qualified players. The only one better would be Zach Edey, but he's played 2 games. And, you know, this is going to hit different considering who the centerpiece on this Grizzlies team is now. But the other reason I think he could be a very good centerpiece for this team going into the future, we haven't seen all of the unrealized, you know, potential that he still has to unlock, but he seems to be all about the team. He always says the right things. He does the right things, doesn't live on social media, and he doesn't seem to be the type of disruptor that the current centerpiece in Ja Morant is. So, like, I'm looking at all these things from Cedric Coward, and I feel like going into the future, you're going to have a couple of high picks next year. He may be the guy you look at if you're the Grizzlies front office. On the cheap deal, he's still going to be on for a couple more years, and you say, let's try to build around him for the time being.
Maybe. That's an off-season type of decision. You know, I think that everything we've seen from Cedric Coward is very encouraging. The most encouraging thing of the season, maybe the only encouraging thing of the season. I do think that Vince Williams Jr. playing basketball again and looking good matters. Zach Edey looks really damn good. First 2 games back. Once he learns how to really dominate the post and just dunk more.
And I think even this year, once his conditioning catches up, he'll be
Talked to DeMichael last night. There was a quote about how he was winded. He was a bit winded in the game last night, which is understandable. It's his second game back, and he was being asked to do a lot because he was, quite frankly, their second best player last night outside of Cedric Coward. Maybe third best player if you include Vince Williams Jr. because he was great last night too. I know Cam had a good offensive performance, but he was terrible defensively, and to be honest, that killed you in the minutes that he was out there. But with Cedric Coward, in terms of centerpiece, that's really early to have that conversation. We've got to see a full season of it. We've got to see a full season of Ja. Can he give you a full season? Is he going to bounce back out of this slump emotionally and his play? Is he going to be able to bounce back and be that leader for you? I think that we've said it a few times already. This is kind of the make or break season, I think, for Ja and the Grizzlies to see if that can happen, because this team just can't afford another lost season because Ja isn't around or isn't himself. At some point, you have to say, we've got to move on for this, or we have to turn our attention somewhere else.
Yep.
In terms of the coach, I'm kind of with you. I'm very frustrated with Tomas Isolo. Listen, I understand that Edey and Coward were on minute restrictions last night. I have questions about whether that's necessary, though. Why are we doing that in a winnable basketball game when you need wins right now?
Cedric Coward went on an 8-0 run by himself and got pulled.
That's what we're talking about.
That makes me sick to my stomach.
The feel for it. There is a spreadsheet that is being treated as if it is the Bible when it comes to rotations right now for the Grizzlies. And that's where people's frustrations are coming in. There are a few reasons why the Grizzlies lost last night. Let's not get tricked about it. Jaren was terrible in the fourth quarter. Your starters came in with about 5:30 to go, and they did not execute well, and the Spurs hit a couple of shots and ran away with it. They went up by 10 all of a sudden. Game was over like that. But I still think that Isolo sets up his team to not be successful all the time. He handcuffs them. Because do you know when those starters came back in the game, what happened? They went from being up to down. They went from being up to down.
Yep.
Because of the non-starters that were on the court. And I expressed my frustrations about it last night on social. And
yeah.
Everyone kept trying to make it about the closing lineup to me. Where I was like, I'm not talking about the closing lineup. I'm talking about why, with 6 minutes left
feel
in the game.
Feel for the game.
There's no feel for the game. We don't have a single starter on the court. I'm not asking for all five of them. I'm asking for one of them. Jaren, listen, Jaren wasn't good in the fourth quarter. But you know what? He's my $50 million man. I'm going down with him.
Right.
Jalen, better last night. Wasn't great offensively, but his defense is going to matter 6 minutes into the fourth quarter or 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. What about Jalen? Vince played 30 minutes. Was great last night. Made a couple winning plays. Was one of the reasons you had the lead in the fourth quarter. Nowhere to be seen. Why? I'm not asking for all five starters. I wasn't even asking for Coward and Edie when they were on minutes restrictions. I'm asking for the other three that weren't on minutes restrictions and didn't play 35 minutes. I don't understand it. He's handcuffing his own team, and he's making it difficult for them.
You.
Yes, they came in, and they weren't able to execute, and the Spurs went on a run. But they came back in, and they had lost the lead.
Yep.
They were up when they went out, and they were down when they came back in. And that is the whole issue. And it's not just the fourth quarter. It's the entire basketball game. It's the entire game. Jaren started the game okay. Got twisted his ankle a little bit, came out, came back in. Pulls him immediately. There's no rhythm in it whatsoever. Yeah. Coward. 8-0 run. Ah, let's sit
and
him.
You know what people would say to you told is me the to. Starters, the starters at the closing lineup gave up an 11-0 run, but I also would tell the people that, that parrot that talking point. I don't know if those starters had ever really
they had already lost the lead.
They lost the lead, and then like trying to get your rhythm in a pressure packed situation like that's not the easiest thing to do in the world. So that's what I would say to them. Now, do we have our favorite guys sound here?
I can't believe I am agreeing with Draymond Green today.
But if you think I'm drinking the Cedric Coward Kool-Aid a little bit too much, I think there's one guy, and you may have to drop the Draymond beef for a second. There's one guy named Draymond Green that seems to think even higher of him than I do. Go ahead and play the sound.
He 1,000% could be like Kawhi Leonard. No questions asked. Cedric Coward, if he can get better with the ball, has the potential to be like a Kawhi Leonard. He's already a really good defender. At this age right now, he's a better shooter than Kawhi was. Not quite as athletic as Kawhi was. But I think Cedric Coward, player comp, healthy Kawhi Leonard, his game has great pace to it. He has great length, uses his size well, can defend up, can defend down. Like, I really think, and obviously, like, Kawhi worked his off, right, to become Kawhi. Like, obviously, Cedric got to put the work in. But if he do put the work in, and if he do love this, he 1,000% could be like Kawhi Leonard.
That's drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah,
I think he could be the centerpiece for this team going forward, but saying he's going to be Kawhi Leonard is a step I'm not ready to take, but I do get the idea.
The idea of it's there. The archetype is there.
And he is outperforming what Kawhi did in his rookie and second year right this second.
No. No, Kawhi went toe-to-toe with LeBron in an NBA Finals, I think, in his second season.
Well, no, I'm talking about all the numbers put together, the averages, things like that. Now, I'm not talking about, like, playoff success. He was on a he was dragged and dropped into the Spurs organization.
Hey, that's true. We got to be honest about it. We got to contextualize it. I get it. I love Coward. I do think that he has the archetype and the ability to become someone like Kawhi. I also don't want to put that expectation on him. If I think that Coward, even if he doesn't become Kawhi Leonard, could be a very important player on a winning basketball team. And for me, that's a win.
I'm not even on could be. I'm will be.
I think he will be. He is a winning player. He hits huge shots for the Grizzlies all the time. I mean, last night it happened, knocked down a three, they went up, and then of course the lineup changed and everything else happened. But that's just my frustration overall. It's the Grizzlies have a few different issues going on. It's not just one thing. And I think that this war that's happening within Grizzlies fandom is people are trying to make it one thing, or they're trying to paint others as it making one thing. It's not just the lineups. It's not just the injuries. It's not just the coaching. It's not just the transactions that this front office may or may not have made. It's all of them. It's all of it.
Yep.
The injuries are an issue. The rotations are an issue. The coaching schemes are an issue. And not having certain players or some of the trades that they made or some of the picks that they made that didn't hit is an issue. All of it is one of the reasons they have taken a step back this year. It's one of the reasons they're struggling right now. There's not one person or one thing to blame. So stop trying to make it that.
It's a lot of things.
It's a lot of different things going on. And to be honest, everyone that is making a point about one of them is kind of right.
Yep.
So stop pretending like it's one thing.
It's the old blame.
Stop yelling at each other.
It's the blame pie.
Yes, exactly. It's the blame pie. But it's when you're watching these games. Listen, if I know when the starters are being subbed out for the Grizzlies, you know the other team does too. And you know what they're doing? They're leaving their starters in when the Grizzlies roll in their bench unit 8 minutes into the or at 8 minutes
in
the first quarter.
3 minutes or 4 minutes.
It's four. It's on average 3 minutes and 30 seconds or 4 minutes into the first quarter they pull their guys. And the other teams are leaving them in, and they're getting blown off the court.
Yep.
In those minutes. And that's why, and listen, I can already hear people, well, they don't have an NBA roster right now because of the injuries.
Yes.
Then leave your guys in who are NBA players longer.
But
that's
the
point.
Even with the roster that Tomas Isolo has at his disposal, he's not maximizing.
He's not maximizing.
And I don't think anyone, there's no one that can sell me that he is or is even coming close.
Well, it's like it's frustrating when you look at the, like, I know plus minus doesn't tell the whole story, but I think last night it tells a story. Cedric Howard was plus +3, Edie plus +4, Vince Williams Jr. plus +11. None of them were on the court.
Yeah, until 6 minutes left.
Jalen Wells was minus -1. He was still effective last night.
Yep.
But only played 27 minutes. And listen, Cam, he was scoring minus -23 though. Killed you on defense. KCP crushed you.
That's how
minus
it works.
-16. Jock, terrible, minus -17 in 18 minutes. Do you know how hard it is to be minus -17 in 18 minutes?
At the end of the day, the concept of I don't have my best bench guys, I don't have enough good NBA players in my second unit, I should play my starters, that concept shouldn't be that hard to grasp.
No.
That seems like the most simple, obvious concept.
Santi was good last night. Then play him more than 26 minutes. If Edie's on a minutes restriction, when he comes out, it doesn't need to be Jock going in. It needs to be Santi staying on the court.
Yep.
With Jaren.
Yep.
Listen, I get Jaren wasn't good in the fourth quarter last night, but go down with the shit. I would rather go down with Jaren than go down 100%. With Jock Landale.
No doubt. No doubt in my mind. All right, now we need to go ahead and grab a break. We're a little bit late to it. So let's bring on Braden Faux. Going to talk some NFL, maybe a little bit of college football coaching carousel on the other side right here on the Gabe Coons.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
John 92.9 FM ESPN. In the midst of this football season, Braden Faux has gone from NFL free agent to one of the best free agents in the sports media space. He is on X at Braden Faux and won a national championship in 2019 with Louisiana State University. And he joins me now. Braden, what's happening, man? How are you?
What's up, brother? How you doing?
Man, I'm hanging in there. I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. How are you doing in LSU's world? I mean, you're looking for a good coach. We'll talk about it toward the end of this conversation.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Everything good there?
I'm great. Brian Kelly's fired, man. And I mean, all is well in Baton Rouge right now. Yeah. I could not be happier.
All right. Now, I want to start with the NFL because you did a good job of clarifying on social media for those that, you know, try to do the conspiracy theories when it comes to Kevin Stefanski and the Browns and how they're treating Shedeur Sanders.
Yeah.
But, like,
the
big conversation comes into the game after Dylan Gabriel goes out with a concussion. He's in concussion protocol. He's going to get the start this weekend, so hopefully we can put some of this stuff to bed. But yeah. He goes 4-for-12, and the conversation becomes, well, he didn't take any reps with the first team. Could you, you know, impart some wisdom on my listeners and me in regards to, is that supposed to happen on a given week for a backup? Are they supposed to get first team reps? Is a guy that's drafted in the fifth round as a rookie supposed to get first team reps during the year?
You know, what pains me is not only has myself as a former NFL player spoken up as an undrafted guy who's somebody who's a day three who I may have got one or two reps a day in practice. And that's if a coach is feeling great about it. But, you know, you've seen multiple players speak out. You've seen McCown speak out. You've seen Chase Daniel speak out. It is not normal. It's in the day and age of the NFL today for a backup, let alone a fifth-round backup quarterback, to get reps in practice. That's just not how it works. Time and time again, you see Tom Brady reiterate, it's so important as a backup, especially as a quarterback, but any position in the NFL, to take mental reps. That's why they continue to reiterate that to guys. Hey, make sure you're getting mental reps, because you're going to get thrown into the fire. And when you do, you're expected to go out and execute as if you did take the reps. And that's what I was just trying to say, is not everybody gets the fair share of the load during the week in the NFL. When I backed up Linval Joseph, Linval took all the reps right. in L.A., you know.
Right.
But when I got thrown in the game, coach expected me to play like Linval Joseph. And you know, I wasn't afforded the excuse of, coach, I didn't see this inside zone run. I didn't see counter OT in practice on Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah,
when Linval
get the mental reps, Bubba. Come on.
You know what I mean? And so, you know, part of me is glad that Shador is getting the start this week. One, because I'm happy for the kid. I'm always happy for a day three draft pick, somebody who's had to battle uphill climbs in the NFL to get their shot. I think that's awesome. Another thing, too, is we're going to get clarity this week. We're going to get to see the type of quarterback that Shador Sanders thinks he is, and that the rest of the sports world, football fans, Cleveland fans, Colorado fans, get to see who Shador Sanders is this Sunday against the Raiders.
Yeah, and then the other part of this whole thing, like when it comes to the conspiracy, they'll say, well, you know, he's just not gotten the same shake as Dillon Gabriel. He's just not gotten the same shake. Well, you know how common it is at every level of football, high school, college football, NFL, peewee, high-level peewee, for God's sakes. If there's two guys that a coach believes in more than the third guy, those two guys are going to have more focus on them. They're going to be brought along. There's going to be more of an effort to develop them over that third guy. That doesn't mean he gets ignored completely. But it's so common for a coach to pick favorites within the room that he controls. You know, it's strange funny. To me that people can't grasp that. This is professional football. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? This ain't intramurals.
You know, Gabe, I look back to a face and a name we all know, Brock Purdy. I look back to a face we all know, Dak Prescott. These guys weren't afforded opportunities till the guys in front of them got hurt. And you can go back to their development as rookies. You can go back to the leads they had in practice. They weren't afforded opportunities to work with the ones. These guys were not thrown into the fire till the guy. And I look at Brock Purdy's a great example. It took for Jimmy Garoppolo's ankle or whatever it was to fall off the bone. It took for Trey Lance to get hurt. And then they said, you know what, let's go with Mr. Irrelevant. And that's the nature of the game in the NFL. That's the business. And it doesn't matter. It just doesn't happen at the quarterback position. It happens at every single position. But powerful of you see the power of social media now and
yes.
how powerful it is. People are going to create agendas. People are going to create something to grasp onto if nothing they can believe in goes 100%. But like I said, a lot of questions will be answered this Sunday with Shador.
No doubt, and I'm looking forward to it. Now, and he'll have a good chance. They're playing the Raiders. That's not a very good defense. Chiefs dynasty. We know that they've won a lot. We know that they basically have an apartment and wherever the Super Bowl site is, you know, the past 5-6 years. But what's interesting to me is what made them great a year ago and willed them to that Super Bowl against the Eagles. Now, granted, they got blown out. Is they won a bunch of one-score games, and that was timely mm-hmm. defense. That was timely playmaking on behalf of Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes. That was timely play calling by both Steve Spagnuolo on the defensive side and Andy Reid on the offensive side.
Mm-hmm.
But they went 11-0 in one-score games. This mm-hmm. year, they're 5-5 on the outside looking in at the playoff picture in the AFC, and they're 0-5 in those same one-score games. Mm-hmm. They're not, you know, the late-game heroics, the late-game execution is not what it once was. So –
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to ask it this way, but I guess I'll ask it this way because this is sports talk radio. Is the Chiefs dynasty dying right now? Or do you think they can climb up out of this sort of hole they're in and will themselves back to a Super Bowl this year?
No, I don't think they're done. I think they're far from being done. And when I look at it, you know, I think a lot of it just goes to show the losses they've taken this year are credible losses. It's not like they're losing games that, oh, they should have won this game. Like the Jacksonville game. Jacksonville's a good team, man. They just put BTA, and I won't say what BTA is for the sake of sports radio, but they put BTA to the Chargers, man. Like, that's a really good team now. Jacksonville's a really good team. They also lost to Philadelphia, and they played phenomenal defense against Jalen Hurts. I don't even know if Jalen Hurts passed 100 that game. They also lost to the Chargers in Brazil by one score. So the losses Kansas City has taken this year, they've also lost to Buffalo, are credible losses. When I look at Kansas City at 5-5, I'm not falling for that smoke of, hey,
right,
Kansas City's, you know, outside looking in, they're not the same Kansas City. Because trust me, if Kansas City gets into the playoffs, Gabe, as a wild card team,
sure,
I'd be very scared as a divisional winner to go and face one of Kansas City or Buffalo, who also might be in the wild card this year.
But is it as easy to say as, hey, just they had the first place schedule, so they have some tougher games on their schedule? Or like when you look at their flaws, like what sticks out to you? Like what do they need to improve upon to get back to where they always are?
I think the run game. Kansas City has always, it's never been flashy of a run game, but it's been efficient. And I saw Andy Reid answer a few questions in his Zoom press conference. I think it was either yesterday or Monday, where they asked him, they said, hey, what's going on with the run game? And he says, well, a lot of it in today's game is extensions of the run game. You saw our RPOs, and I think a statistic showed they called about 7 of those or 8 of those on first down where it was an RPO, it was a swing screen, it was some extension of it where it was 4, 5, 6 yards on first down, which is great. I'm a huge fan of efficient first down gains and if it's an extension of the run game. But to me, when you get to the later parts of December, January, sure, and especially the Super Bowl in February, you need a true run game. You need a true hand off the ball. Get your running back toting the rock in between the tackles. Why? Because that's an extension of not just your run game additions in the RPO system, but the play action game. Mm-hmm. Kansas City's bread and butter, and not bread and butter, but I should say their moneymaker is their shots, right? Kansas City is one of those teams where they don't care if you're going to deploy a two-shell system. They don't care if you got the best corners in the league. They're going to test you deep. And if teams don't respect your run game, if they don't sit here and say, we're not going to respect you, Patrick Mahomes, of handing the ball off to Kareem Hunt on first and second down, we're going to play 12, 15 yards off the ball with our corners and our safeties. Yeah. Until you can show us that you can hand off the ball and tote the rock, not extensions of it, you can tote the rock, we'll do that. But I still got faith in Kansas City. I think if they get in the dance, nobody wants to face them. I think they're a team to be reckoned with. And it makes, I think the football ratings and the script writers are setting this up really good with Kansas City and Buffalo being in the wild card, man.
Right. And then the opposite of the Chiefs this year is the team they played in the Super Bowl, where I think the vibes are completely off with the the Philadelphia Eagles. Mm. Like Jalen Hurts and the A.J. Brown connection isn't the same. A.J. Brown's, you know, put his frustrations out there on social media, on, you know, his streaming when he's playing Madden. Like, he's throwing it out there. Vibes aren't there, but they're still winning. You know, they're the number one seed because they have the tiebreaker over the Rams in the NFC. But I don't think they're a better team than the Rams, even though they won that ball game. But, like, when you look at the Eagles' flaws, are they going to be fatal by the time we get to the postseason? Because we've seen it both ways, where last year we had the same concerns they ran through, but then the year before they bowed out because of those same flaws in the first round against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, you know, this year particularly, I'm not buying stock in the Eagles, especially for a late season run. And the reason why is just because I'm not going to paint A.J. Brown the bad guy. I think what he said in his past media interviews and his open sessions with them has been right. They need to be dominating teams. The way they're winning games with the talent they have is not sustainable, Gabe. Your running game, it doesn't run through Saquon Barkley right now. It's not efficient. Your passing game, it's not even sustainable. You don't know who's your true receiver one. It should be A.J. Brown, but there's weeks where it changes. Some weeks it's Devontae Smith. Some weeks it's Dallas Goedert. Some weeks it's Jahan Dotson. And don't get me wrong, those are good things, but there's no sustainable part of your offense to say, you know what, we can go toss the rock for 250 this week and run it for 125,
right,
and we can put those numbers up on a weekly basis. When you look at the Philadelphia Eagles, they're winning games, in my opinion, because of their defense with Vic Fangio. I think Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis, Ojomo, the fourth-round pick they had from a year back, he's come on phenomenal this year. And then the addition of Jalen Phillips, Zach Bond, that secondary, Quinyon Mitchell, the Vanilla Ice boys, they're going crazy right now, Gabe. They're winning. Philadelphia is winning games because of their defense, and it's very similar, in my opinion, to LSU. How I stated, don't let the record fool you. They're winning games, but it's not pretty when you watch it. And that shit
Oh, you're good.
That stuff catches up with you. That stuff catches up with you when you play the good teams. Like you said, when you play the Stafford, who they got a powerhouse on offense, they can score. Can you keep up with them in a track meet in the playoffs?
Yep, I hear you. Hey, FCC regulations. You had it good at the beginning of the interview. Hey, a little slip up every once in a while. It's all right.
Sorry about that.
You're on YouTube. You're good,
man.
Brother.
Sorry to listeners, man.
You're good,
I got the dump. We're good.
Yeah. They're grown folks. They're grown folks. I think they can handle it. Now, top of the AFC is interesting, right? You have the Broncos, the Patriots, and the Colts. Now, I know you still believe in the Chiefs. You know, if they get in as a wild card team, no one wants to see them. But like those teams at the top that just continue to win. How much do you believe, right? Like in the Patriots and Colts in particular, like how much do you believe in those two teams? They seem to be complete. They're winning games at a high level. They're winning games running away certain weeks.
Yes.
But how much how much staying power by the time we get to the playoffs do you think both those teams have?
I'll tell you this. I believe in Indianapolis. I believe in the Patriots. Strictly why is because they have both a running game, they have a passing game, and they play gritty defense. Now, I don't say they play lights out defense, but they play gritty defense. They do enough on that side of the ball to get stops and turnovers. Now, on the offensive side of the ball with both those teams, Daniel Jones has hit a stride this year. I mean, the last two games, of course, in Atlanta and Pittsburgh, he got sacked 12 times compared to the first nine games, which was a total of like six or seven. But his passing game, his decision-making with the ball, Tyler Warren has come along. Josh Downs, Alec Pierce, Michael Pittman, they have weapons. They have answers. Very opposite to the Eagles, right? Like I said, when you face a team like the Colts, say you do stop Jonathan Taylor and you sell out for the box. Well, you still got to deal with their passing game. They know how to take shots. They know how to hit flood routes against cover three and expose the corner, right, who's a third guy. When I look at the New England Patriots, Drake May has come along as a passer. He's not in that sophomore slump of a quarterback where you're looking like, oh, man, like I'm worried about Drake May with the ball in 2 minutes. It's like, shoot, we got Drake May. Let's go. Yep. Let's roll. Right? Stephon Diggs is the happiest I've ever seen him right now. Right. You know, Hunter Henry is being utilized in a way that is phenomenal. Mac Hollins get touches. And part of me is, why did they wait so long for Travion Henderson? But
I agree with you.
It looks great, and you got Ramondre Stevenson coming back from injury. The team I'm not sold on the AFC is the Broncos.
That offense, ain't it? It's just inconsistent.
I think they're the Eagles of the AFC. I think they're riding a lot on just dink and dunk football, just trying to get by on offense and hoping their defense just plays legendary for them enough to stay in games.
Yeah. Now, final thing, you're an LSU grad. You won a national championship there. Who do you want to see be the next head coach? I know you originally started this conversation online, and I think, you know, T-Bob Hebert, who's at Barstool, he agreed with you. He's an alum there at LSU. But Kelvin Shepard, the DC for the Lions, was a guy that you sort of handpicked, sort of circled.
Yeah.
I don't know how likely that is. He can't interview.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.
until the end of the season in the NFL just because of how the rules work. But yeah. As of right this second, like, who would you like to see coaching LSU going into next season?
You know, it's tough, and just as I've shut down the Lane Kiffin things on social media, I've had to be realistic about it. And as much as I want, the emotional side of me wants a guy like Kelvin Sheffert, I've had to shut that down too. And just being realistic about the whole situation, NFL season runs longer than college football. There's no way you'll be able to get Kelvin to leave as a defensive coordinator for a contender, to leave that job early, drop it, come be the head coach, right? The money has to be there. And then you're going to have to go around the legal obligations of his contract to say, hey, we want to interview Kelvin. It's going to be a messy situation. So I've had to be realistic about that and be like, you know what? Kelvin is not as much as I want him emotionally on books. It's not realistic. And now, in my opinion, I think there's 5, maybe 6 options you go with right now at head coach. I think you go with Kenny Dillingham.
Okay.
John Sumrall, Brent Key, Lincoln Riley, Frank Wilson.
Who's the interim as of right this second?
Who is the interim? Who is the interim right now? I think those 5 are legit options for you. And everybody has said, well, Braden, those options aren't going to get things done. Well, I said, you know what? When you look at the situation we're in, we haven't even finalized the buyout for the last marriage we had with Brian Kelly. Our governor thinks he's Jerry Jones.
Right. Yes, I was going to ask you about that. That is not an attractive thing to have over a job.
It's not, Gabe. And when your governor thinks he's Jerry Jones, right? And
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.